everyone. My name is Fiona, and I'm really excited to be working with Middletown Centre for Autism on this post-primary podcast series. So over the next few days, I'll be chatting to a few other autistic adults like myself to bring you their stories about their own journey during and after school. And we really hope you enjoy listening. Today, I'm joined by Eleanor Walsh. Eleanor, firstly, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with me today and to share your story. I know I've had the pleasure of working alongside you, and as I am before in the past. So while I'm familiar with your journey, I think it'll be great to share it with other young people as well. So could you tell me what age you are and what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Fiona. So I'm 25 and I'm an actor and performer. I'm an autistic advocate. And then I also work for the National Leprechaun Museum as their social engagement coordinator.
That sounds incredibly interesting. So we'll definitely want to be hearing more about that. So that's a really interesting background, just the acting background. Is that something that you always wanted to work in? And how does that incorporate into the National Leprechaun Museum where you are now?
I sort of always knew that I wanted to work in theatre, or that I wanted to, not that I wanted to be on stage, but I wanted to communicate or to tell stories in some way or another. So I was in youth theatre when I was a teenager, which was a really formative experience for me, because you'd be learning actual drama and theatre skills and, you know, going towards putting on a show, as well as, you know, getting to socialise with other young people. Then when it was time for me to do my CAO, I only wanted to study drama and theatre, mainly because I loved it so much. But then on the other hand, I definitely had the feeling that, I guess, like course-wise, I didn't have anything else I could dedicate a full 3 or 4 years to. So I studied drama in DIT, what is now TU Dublin, for 3 years. And that was really, really brilliant. And then I guess when it came to the National Leprechaun Museum, so working at the museum was my first job out of college. I started off as a storyteller. So the museum is all about Irish folklore and mythology through storytelling. So storytellers bring visitors through different spaces in the museum and tell them stories along the way, like Shaniki. So it's a great job for actors and performers. They're always hanging around. So it really helped me acting-wise. Even after I'd left college and I was trying to find acting work, keep those skills going, keep me on my toes, get used to being in front of people. And there was also my first ever proper job, because I found it really hard to get like summer jobs in secondary school or college. Not only because there was a massive recession on when I was in school, but also I found it, even though like I would apply for like jobs in restaurants and shops and everything, I would apply for them even though I knew that sensory-wise, I knew I wouldn't be able to last very long, because I can find it really hard sometimes to spend like half an hour or an hour in those environments, let alone 8 hours on my feet. It was sort of that conundrum as well of needing a job to get experience, but not having enough experience to get a job. Actually, my first proper job was, I had a friend in Kilkenny who ran this historical theatre company. I got a job with her for a couple of weeks in the summer when I was 17, dressing up as this like medieval merchant's wife and walking around the shopping centre in Kilkenny with pictures of like old markets and ladies' fashions in the Middle Ages to talk to people about it. My friend who ran the theatre company was like, oh, Eleanor, you like history and you're in youth theatre, so you can do this. And then when I was applying to the Leprechaun Museum, it was like, oh, you've done this sort of thing before, right? You don't have much experience on the till, we can teach you, so we know you can do this job.
I mean, that's fantastic, and it's just so different, but you can see how that really engaged your interests, what you were interested in at the time, but also how it went on to give you the experience ultimately to lead you to where you're working at the moment. And just whenever you were saying there about when you're applying for college, I know you mentioned the CAO, which up north they call it the UCAS. So it's the same kind of system. And you said the only things really you wanted to put down were acting related, were theatre related. Was that an interest that was with you from a very young age?
I think so. I mean, I remember going to see my first play, which was called The Bus, I think. And it was about these kids going on the school bus every day to school, and all the things they'd get up to, and all the chats and their arguments they'd have. Kilkenny is a brilliant place to grow up in if you're any way creatively inclined, because they've created so many interesting things for children and young people to get involved with. So I was very lucky in that sense. Yeah, I think, you know, it was always theatre for me, and not just acting or film, whatever. It was always theatre. And I even turned a local theatre company in Kilkenny into like a special interest for a time when I was 14, which I didn't have the words then to say, oh, this is a, I think this is has become a special interest now. I just wanted to find out everything about them, which I'm not sure how much they appreciated. When it came time to at the end of school to figure out what I wanted to study, that was the main thing I wanted to do. And I was very lucky to have understanding parents who supported that all the way, who knew that this was something that was really important to me and that I loved.
And that's so important as well, because, I mean, whenever you think back to most kids whenever they're younger and you say, what do you want to be when you're older? There's the same kind of answers you'll get. It's almost like those become less realistic, or perhaps it's that children's creativity doesn't tend to be nurtured as much that bit later. So whenever you do hear of somebody who's interested in things like acting or theatre or music or dancing the whole way through their life and still want to pursue that whenever they're leaving school, I think it is reflective of the fact that they've had some really good support and encouragement around what their interests are growing up. And I think you really hit the nail on the head there by saying that you had a family and you had parents who encouraged that. So do you think that did influence your interest in it, or managed to sustain your interest in it because they said, this is something you're good at, this is something you can do?
Definitely. I think they were better able to notice probably than I was how much being in youth theatre and going to rehearsals every single week, how important that was for me socially and for my confidence and everything. And I think because they saw like how much I wanted this, they were like, oh, we have to let her at this. And then also there was the thing of that local theatre company that I mentioned. I got to work with them when I was 15, a show they were doing, which they made, they commissioned a play from like a 17-year-old playwright in Kilkenny, all about teenagers. It was called Shifting. It was this amazing play. And they asked me to be the assistant director. And I was 15, and I was way younger than everyone else. And I got to learn so much and be a respected member of the team. And it was amazing to have that sort of that trust placed in me and to be around that table and hear those conversations that were being had. And most of the people in that company were from Kilkenny, trained in drama at GIT, and then came home and started their own company and made the work they wanted to do. So I knew then that it was possible for me to do that as a young person in Kilkenny, that you could go up to Dublin and spend 3 years thinking about theatre and then do what you wanted. Yeah, it was great to have that in my own backyard.
Sometimes
you need to see these things are possible.
Absolutely, and that's what I was just thinking. There's a really strong sense from what you're saying that you had a lot of positive influences locally around you, not just in your family, but in those that you were interacting with. And, you know, your interest in the local theatre helped to expose you to some people who you could learn from. I suppose looking back then to school, what would you say your experience of school was like?
I quite enjoyed primary school. I started off in a school in Kilkenny for children with special needs because my speech was delayed. Sensory wise, I found things very difficult. I was quite sensitive. So there would have been like six children in my class, for example. And we had SNAs, occupational therapy. I didn't know like the words for any of these things. This is just, you know, because I didn't know of my diagnosis then. So it was just really normal for me, apart from that, like I couldn't read any books when I read books about school or saw school on television, it was all nothing like my school, which was kind of strange.
Okay.
And then at the end of third class, I transitioned into my local national school, my local primary school. And that was very different. So it was going from 30 kids in school to 200, you know, and 30 kids in my class. And it was also like a rural country school. So you would have like fourth and fifth class in the same room and fifth and sixth class in the same room, you know? And that was really weird. I had to learn not to answer the questions of the other class. But I think I felt really supported. And I think probably because I was doing so well in primary school, it was really unexpected then for the adults around me when I didn't do well at all in secondary school. So I did not like secondary school. I found it both the social aspects of it and the academic quite difficult. I think one of the big social aspects that I found difficult, especially at the start in first year, I was thinking about this the other day, whereas in, say, sixth class, in primary school, our last year of primary school, when we would have been, my friends and I would have been like 12, and we would have still been running around the yard at lunchtime playing games. 3 months later, we start secondary school, and all of a sudden it's verboten. All you're meant to do at lunchtime is just sit around and chat and offer your leg and say, "Feel my leg, I shaved last night." And like, when were you meant to start shaving? No one tells you about this. I found it very hard to say, make and keep friends in secondary school. And one of the big reasons for that was actually, you know, at lunch, you know, we're meant to sit in empty classrooms or sit in this huge canteen and eat our lunches. But I found it way, way too loud to hear even the people beside me, what they were saying. So then I couldn't keep up a conversation. And all I could do was just eat my lunch. And that sounded like, or it seemed like I was ignoring them. Like a simple little thing now, but I didn't realize at the time. I didn't have the language to describe myself as autistic or what any of the things I was experiencing meant. I just thought I was really bad at life because I was getting so much more tired than everyone else at the end of the day. I got known as being theater girl in the year, and people thought that was cool, which is quite nice. But I still found, like, academically, like, there wasn't enough hours in the day to complete everything. Just because it took me a lot longer to complete tasks. I was, I don't know how to study as well as do homework. I found secondary school quite difficult.
Funny, and I know that anybody who's listening wasn't able to see me sitting there and nod profusely at everything you were saying, but it brought back a lot of memories for me as well in secondary school. Something we used to do is go to the canteen and then you'd get your lunch and you'd bring it back to the classroom that had been allocated for your class to eat lunch in. But the problem arose then if you had a class in there straight after, or you had actually a class in any classroom straight after that, somebody had just eaten their lunch in there, which meant for the last three periods of the day, I find it very difficult to concentrate where you're sitting in a room full of lunch smells.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Everybody else seems totally oblivious to this. But it's funny you saying that because that had totally blocked out of my memory. But it's things like that that can be a massive barrier for autistic students in secondary school, that the majority of people aren't aware is an issue, or maybe aren't even aware is even there.
Yeah.
Things that we don't think about, that, you know, having to process that as well as having to listen to a lesson, as well as trying to take down what your homework is and understand everything. It's a lot. It really is a lot. And like you said, it seems like something small, but it's whenever it's a lot of small things combined, that's when it becomes overwhelming, I think. And you said it did get better. Do you feel that throughout secondary school, was there anything in particular that really changed, or was it you became more used to how secondary school worked?
That's a really good question.
I know people say that as autistic people get older, it's not a case of you stop being autistic. It's just you learn better coping mechanisms around things that might bother you.
Hmm.
And as you get older in school, I suppose first year, second year, it's going to be massively overwhelming. It's a totally new system. But mm-hmm. by the end of secondary school, did it feel easier for you?
In some ways, no. What got easier, I found it from, I guess, transition year onwards. That was a big year for me in fourth year, so I would have been 16, where I guess, you know, we got to try out new things and I got to do work experience theatres, you know. Also because you and your classmates and the people in your year group are all trying these new things together and it isn't so academically focused, you get to see new sides of each other. And I think that was what helped me make friends then in the next 2 years. And then I guess I sort of, you know, had these roles that I picked up and I got more comfortable with. So as I said, I was the person who did drama and theatre and was going to be an actor. And I was also, you know, during a lunch break, you know, sitting and eating with my friends, I wouldn't say very much. But when I did say anything, I would be like the funny one. So like, I was like, oh, okay, that's my thing. I can be funny. I also, when I was in secondary school, I also had a blog, and that was a big outlet for me. And it was like this, and it was something that the rest of my year didn't really know about, I don't think, but it was like my little magazine that I could write for and edit and publish whenever I wanted. So that was a great outlet for me. It was on Twitter and Tumblr that I learned a lot about what I was interested in, things about feminism, you know, because back when I was a teenager in the late noughties, you know, feminism and, you know, and women wanting rights and stuff was still sort of seen as like mad, was still seen as, you know, crazy and entitled and outdated. And it was still, you know, you could be angry at like a guy harassing you in a nightclub or about the contents of a song. Was still a very new thing, I think, or at least in our, you know, that's what it felt like at the time. There's always been stuff to be angry about. It was Twitter, actually, was one of those things that helped me to imagine myself working in theatre when I was older. But I joined Twitter in like 2009 when I was 13 for no real reason. I was like the only person I knew in real life on Twitter. And that's when all the theatre companies in Dublin started joining Twitter as well in the next year. And it was really easy then to follow what they were doing and all these shows that I didn't get to see, but that I still knew about, and I could trace these companies. So that then when I, by the time 6 years later, when I got to Dublin, I could talk about them in lectures where my classmates couldn't. So I'm not advocating that you should spend all your time on Twitter. Like, I'm currently contemplating, like, how can I take a social media break whilst also doing my social media job?
Looking then at whenever you left secondary school and you started college, how was that different then again?
So the way that my course was set up was there was 20 of us in a class and we all took the same modules. So it was the 20 of us in every class for 3 years. It was a bit like school in that way, except because even though we were all came from very different backgrounds, we have this one thing uniting us and pushing us together and driving us on. So it was much, much easier for me to make friends and to socialize then. I guess when it came to leaving home, I didn't really think too much about until I had actually done it. Mm-hmm. Because in Kilkenny, there isn't a university really near us. So the expectation is that like everybody leaves. I didn't really realize everything that would go into living on my own until like my first night in Dublin. I don't know where the shop is. I suppose one of the main things that changed my experience of college as opposed to my experience in school was that in college, I knew I was autistic. And I was slowly, through lots of Tumblr research and trying to find books, I was building up a language to describe what I actually experienced as an autistic person and what I was going through and what other autistic people were going through, and other autistic women, you know, and other autistic students and young people. And in secondary school, As I said, I didn't have that knowledge, and I didn't have that language or that awareness. And that was huge. I mean, I did sign up for the disability service at the start of college. I suppose the unusual thing was, well, how unusual my course was, because we didn't really have lectures. We had workshops and rehearsals, and we didn't have exams. We had assessments, you know, and scenes, and we would have to perform things, and those were our assessments. So most of the accommodations in lectures and class and for exams that the disability service offers, I couldn't use because they didn't apply to my course.
All those typical accommodations that come with the disability service don't really apply, but did you still feel that they were there for support if you did need them?
I do. I think it was nice, even though the resources that they has or the funding that they has meant that they couldn't support me a lot practically. It was always nice to know that, like, they were in sort of in my corner, and that I could, you know, that if I said, oh, I'm having trouble with this, they would at least have an idea of what I was talking about. Also, I got the printing credit with Grace. But so a couple of weeks after, in my first year after I started, I went around to most of my lecturers, or the ones I saw most, and said, I just want to let you know that I'm autistic. I didn't know before. So that's why I didn't come up through DARE. I don't really know what this means yet for me or for us, but, you know, we'll figure it out. And, you know, for the most part, they were game, yeah, and sort of let me do what I needed to do. So if I needed to step away from an exercise for a few minutes, if I found it too overstimulating, or leave the room for a minute, you know, they wouldn't bat an eyelid. So I guess I was really lucky in that sense.
I mean, what that really shows there is that you had the confidence to advocate for yourself in that situation. And I mean, I imagine most lecturers or most tutors would be very open to that, to seeing a young student come up and say, look, this is me, this is my identity, these are some of the things I need, and, you know, we'll work together to get there, but I'll always let you know if I need extra support. I mean, that's really what one of the biggest barriers we always say that exists in As I Am for autistic people is others not knowing what to do or what the right thing is to do or how they can help. So by telling somebody at the very beginning and advocating for yourself and saying, you know what, this might help, or I don't know yet, but when I find out, I'll let you know. That's hugely helpful for somebody in knowing what it is they can do for you.
Yeah, it was really, really helpful that I suppose I was just, even if they didn't know much about autism, that I was sort of trusted as an adult to, something I kept hearing is, you know, do what you need to do what I needed to do, and then to come to them if there was anything specific. Because again, like at that time, I didn't like a definite idea of what, say, the classes or the workshops or the lectures were going to be like. But I didn't know how I was going to react to anything as an autistic person. I was still finding that out, and also trying to look back at my life thus far with the knowledge that I was autistic, you know, so that was new for me too. But they were very patient and helpful. I hadn't really told any of my classmates I was autistic at that stage yet, though, and I didn't really let most of them know until the end of college, when I think they'd sort of figured it out, because I spent a lot of my third year talking about, like, autism related things and hoping they wouldn't notice. And I guess that was because, as you said, one of the biggest barriers that autistic people face is other people not being aware. And that was something I was very afraid of and conscious of. And also because the Irish arts and the Irish theatre community is so small, I didn't know if I wanted to be the autistic actor yet. So I thought I would give it time.
Yes, I totally understand. And I think we're in quite a different space at the moment where, you know, the creative sector in general has a lot of neurodiversity in it, a lot of different types of minds, autistic, dyspraxic, just neurodiverse in general.
Yeah.
And it's become a community of its own, and theatre is becoming a really inclusive place at the moment. But I suppose just to wrap up, And I'd love to just sit here and chat to you about this all day, because I think it's really helpful for young people to be hearing this journey. And, you know, that it can be difficult along the way, but whenever you get the opportunity to focus on what you're interested in, that's when you really become yourself. That's when you get to make friends with the same interest. That's when you get the confidence. And I suppose if you were able to give any words of advice or give any encouragement to any autistic teenagers or anybody really at that stage who's listening, what do you think those would be?
Gosh.
Big question.
I would say a number of things. Firstly, follow your passions, follow your interests as much as you can. I know that's something that, like, folks as I am say a lot, that, you know, there's more than, you know, you can find a career and fulfillment with your special interests, and in, and it really is true. Now, that's not to say that, like, you don't have to turn everything you like into, like, a side hustle. You can't just have hobbies anymore. They have to be, like, small part-time businesses or whatever. But whether it's career-wise or just in your personal life, make time for your passions and your special interests. As an autistic person, try to keep learning about autism and about yourself as an autistic person. That means both, you know, learn about, you know, what it's been like to be autistic in your area and in your country over the years, and what it's like to be autistic in other places and for other and different types of people, because autism and being autistic affects different communities differently. You know, there's a difference between being autistic in Belfast and being autistic in, like, North Kerry, you know, or being autistic as, you know, as a girl or gay or as a person of color. And then also, because you do change and grow as an autistic person, every so often it's good to check in with yourself and see, okay, have I been going through a lot of sensory overload recently? Have my sensitivities changed? Has my special interest changed? What am I enjoying or not enjoying? But I think the most important thing is, this is something that I've had to face and remind myself, especially recently, that because since I was mainstreamed in primary school, I spend most of my time in neurotypical spaces and in neurotypical environments. I forget to treat myself as an autistic person, and that I can advocate for myself with the skills I use to advocate for others. So I think we have to learn how to treat ourselves as autistic people and not just neurotypical people who are bad at it. And we have to strive for not being a second-rate neurotypical person or trying to be a neurotypical person, because we'll never get there. We'll never do it. And even if we do, it won't be as good as the autistic person we can be or the autistic person we are. So instead of being a second-rate neurotypical person, we can be a first-rate autistic person and do better and feel better and be better being fully ourselves.
That is such a good message to end on, Eleanor. Just give yourself a break. I think sometimes just understand, you know what, this is tough and that's okay. I know that I'm really, really good at other things. And exactly what you said, be a first-rate autistic person, the first-rate version of yourself, not a second or third or fourth-rate version of somebody else.
Because
nobody's ever going to be as good at being you as you can. So I think that's an amazing message to finish on, Eleanor. And thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week in the Leprechaun Museum. I'm not even going to pretend that I'm not jealous. But thank you so much. And hopefully chat to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Fiona. This has been such a pleasure.
No problem at all. Chat soon. Bye, night.
Bye.